Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today's Tuesday, April 20th. To let the record reflect, the time is 3:31 p.m. Today we have present Vice Chair Senator Myers, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Wilson, myself, Chair Hughes. Please silence or turn off your cell phones. Thank you to Christopher Deckrell with Senate Records and Alex Benzak with LIO, and to our aide, Dawson Mann. We have three items on the agenda today. The first, the committee will take up a new committee substitute for Senate Bill 72, School Civics Education, by Senator Stevens. Walk through the summary of changes to that bill. And this committee substitute was distributed to members electronically. I'm hopeful you all have adequate time to review it. And then after that, we'll move to SB 72, which is, following SB 72, we'll hear Senate Bill 81, Village Public Safety Officer Grants, sponsored by Senator Olson. It will be its first hearing, and we will hold that hearing today. And then we will then follow with SB 81, which, following SB 81, we will hold a hearing for SB 46, Law Enforcement Registry Use of Force, by our own fellow member, Senator Gray Jackson. So now we are ready to begin with SB 72. If Senator Stephen Staff Tim Lampkin would come up to the table. Oh, actually, if you sit maybe in the front row and hang out, and well, first we'll have Dawson come to the table. So I am ready to entertain a motion, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 72, Work Order 32-LS-0478/N, be adopted as the working document.
And I will object for purposes of discussion and invite my staff to come up. I want to also note that we took input to create this committee substitute from the sponsors' office, from committee members, and also regarding the public testimony that we heard at the last hearings. So Mr. Mann, welcome. Please identify yourselves and put yourself on the record and tell us what the changes were.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dawson Mann, staff to Senator Hughes, and I will be running through a quick explanation of changes between versions I and N. And I just want to clarify, version I was the version that left the Senate Education Committee, so it is not from version W, which was the last committee substitute we saw. Section 1, on page 1 and page 2, this section is amended to indicate that the statewide civics education curriculum and assessment is based on the civics portion of the U.S. citizenship test, primary source documents, and systems of governments used by Alaska Natives. This section is also amended to require that a student must receive a passing score of 60% on the civics assessment to graduate, and that receiving a passing score will be indicated on the student's transcript. This change also allows for students to take the assessment as many times as needed to receive a passing score. Changes to this section also add a requirement that districts must report student performance on the civics assessment and curriculum to the department, along with an average of district test scores on the assessment. Section 2, page 2, this section is amended to remove the obligation of the board to present in person before legislative committees.
Thank you very much. And are there any questions from members regarding the changes to the committee substitute? So we did spend time with the sponsor, and this actually is a little more similar to how the bill first looked. So at this time, Dawson, thank you very much. And if the Senator Stevens aide Tim Lampkin would come up, if you'd like to make a few comments about this version and any remarks maybe from passing along from Senator Stevens, we're open to listen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens was hoping to make it today, but unfortunately other duties associated with the administration of the Senate's keeping him from coming. So he sent me on his behalf. We appreciate this CS. It is an improvement from the prior one. I can relay that it is indeed sort of a marriage of the original bill and what came out of the Senate Education Committee, and these changes are agreeable to the Senator.
Thank you very much. And one of the things, just as a refresher to me, when Dawson went over the changes, the districts have to provide information on how the students do to the department. Is the department then including that in a report to us?
Madam Chair, that's correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I think one of the great ideas about this bill was Senator Stevens' idea to allow the student to take it as many times as necessary, because that's a learning process. All this, the purpose of this is not to prevent a student from graduating. It's absolutely not the purpose. The idea is that the student graduate with this knowledge. And the citizen, I encourage all of you to go on and try to take it. It was a good refresher course for me just reading through it. And I think I got all but two out of the 100. I did the 100 question one. But anyway, it's a great basic foundation for citizenship, and I think it will help equip all our students. Are there any other comments from members? I just want to say Senator Rob Myers wanted to make sure that there was reference to some of those primary source documents, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, etc. And that's another great thing about the citizens exam. It really draws from those sources, so it incorporates that in as well. So I seem to be the only talkative one about this, but I'm pretty excited about it, because we heard some probably one of the most moving testimonies I've ever heard was from the Commissioner of Education, how important this is at this particular juncture in our country. So I just couldn't think of a better time. And I know it's been in the works a long time. I know there's a way this could be much more prescriptive, but the way this is structured, it still allows that local control of how a district might want to craft their particular curriculum. But they would still, the students would still be required to take that test. And the Alaska Native component is also incorporated in there. I think a lot of schools are already doing that. So, but to get that in our statutes, I think there's no problem whatsoever with that, and it's a good idea. So are there any other comments? Oh, come on. Can't somebody say something beside me?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, just had a question on terms of referrals, committees of referrals. Is this going to up to, I see there is a note attached to this, and it wasn't an original note. Is this going to direct to the floor after this, or is this going up to finance, and did it receive additional committee?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, it is, if it's not already been referred to, it certainly will be, because there is a fiscal note that came associated with the development of curriculum and an assessment.
I believe that was added, because that particular piece was added in the education committee. Okay. So, mm-hmm. Okay, there are no other comments. What is the will of the committee, Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Minute. I need to remove my objection. Are there any further objections to the committee substitute? Okay, seeing none, are there any closing comments? Seeing none, what is the will of the committee, Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 72, Work Order 32-LS0478/N from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And seeing and hearing no objection, the bill moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. back on the record. We are now going to move on to SB 81, Village Public Safety Officer Grants, sponsored by Senator Olson. And he is at the table with his staff, Ken Truitt. Welcome, gentlemen. Please place yourself on the record and tell us about SB 81. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and distinguished members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. My name is Donald Olson. I'm the state senator from District T, and I'm one of the ones that lives out in the village where the Village Public Safety Officer is a prominent place of major role in what happens within the community, whether it's dealing with law enforcement, search and rescue, and other duties as assigned. What the bill, Senate Bill 81, if I could have my chief of staff introduce himself first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Ken Truitt, staffer, Senator Olson.
The history, Madam Chairman, of this bill is that back before Ken Truitt joined my staff, he was working for the for one of the former members in the House who was also very interested in working with the VPSO program, and he was part of the working group. And out of the working group came a number of recommendations, and the recommendations that were adopted and came forward in the print form are what has been boiled down to become essentially the essence of Senate Bill 81. We know that the VPSO program has been a program that's been in place for a number of decades. It has its highs, it's had its lows, it's has its, but it's definitely has shown that it does play a major role in the functioning of a community. Like any other program, it has its good people, it has its better people that are there. The village I come from, Golovin, we've had our VPSO, and he's a very instrumental part of the community, has been there for a number of years, does a very good job of what he's there. People like him. People like somebody that is around. He's married to one of the local ladies that's been, whose family is from Golovin. And next to us up in White Mountain is the guy that's been serving in the as a VPSO for the longest period of time. He's also been there for 30 years or so as a VPSO officer. And so there are successes, at least within the immediate area that I come from, and it's shown that many people have been positively influenced by what's gone on, whether it has been dealing with some of the issues that many of us have to deal with out in rural Alaska or otherwise. So with that, this bill is has the recommendation that came forth from the working group, and Ken Truitt will go ahead and give you the meat and potatoes of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Ken?
Thank you, Senator Olson, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We have a brief presentation.
If you could just state your name, since we have a second male voice, that'd be good.
My apologies, Madam Chair. For the record, Ken Truitt, staff for Senator Olson. I'm just raring to go. And so we have a few slides to just kind of go over how the VPSO working group came to be, the activities that it undertook, and then we'll just go over briefly the recommendations of the report that it adopted, and then I have a sectional that I can walk through, Madam Chair, when we're finished there. So essentially the working group was formed in May 2019, and as it turns out, if I can take you back to that time, this was about 6 weeks before Attorney General Barr came and visited rural Alaska and ended up declaring a public safety emergency in rural Alaska. So credit to the leadership back in 2019 that they had their finger on the pulse of what was becoming a real crisis in rural Alaska for public safety. The working group members appointed by the then President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House were Senator Olson as co-chair, Senators Bishop and Schauer, and then Representative Kopp as co-chair from the House. Speaker Edgman and Representative Rauscher comprised of the group. So here are your current VPSO grantee organizations, and you will notice that they're mostly what we would call historically, these are native nonprofit organizations, one home rule community government, Northwest Arctic Borough, and one recognized Indian tribe, Tlingit and Haida, Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes, comprised of your current organizations that operate VPSO programs. So this was the assignment that the working group was given by the legislative leadership, most importantly to coordinate with the stakeholders, and to look at recruitment and retention obstacles and come up with some solutions to see if we could address some of these issues. As you can see, there was a pretty compressed time frame. If you were a member of this body or the other body, you will remember there was an extended session that summer, and so the group really didn't get started until August of 2019. So they had a pretty compressed time frame to take a look at this program and do the work of the program. Finally, they met twice in January, just 1 week before the beginning of the session, and then the week that the session began, to review a draft and then to a draft report and then to adopt the draft report. So these were the steps and kind of the timeline that occurred between that May of the creation and the starting. You can see it resulted, the report that the working group adopted was adopted in January 24th, 2020, and each legislative office received a copy of this report when it was adopted and read across. And that essentially, as Senator Olson mentioned, the nine recommendations, the short-term recommendations that are in this report became HB 287 and also on the Senate side, SB 231, I think was the Senate number on that. This shows you left to right just the different activities that the full working group participated in. It started first with the Department of Public Safety and the then commissioner and her staff that were involved in managing and running the VPSO program. So the working group met in Anchorage and met with the commissioner in person, sitting next to each other in a small room. It's where the good old days, right, as we call that. And then next was a listening session with the VPSO grantee organization management. So this was what we would call the VPSO working group, made of the different organizations' VPSO coordinators, so the people who actually run the program in the different organizations. This was the frontline managers, if you will, the folks who are actually running and managing the VPSO program out there in rural Alaska. The next thing that happened for the entire working group was the Northwest Arctic Borough Public Safety Commission invited the working group members to participate in the Northwest Arctic Borough Public Safety Commission meeting. So I think there were at least four members of the working group that made the trip and met with the commission and had a listening session with, and Northwest Arctic is the home rule municipality that operates a VPSO program. And then finally, there was a listening session getting into November of the group called the Tribal Unity Caucus. This is, it's loosely started out being sort of affiliated with AFN, recognizing that AFN is kind of an organization that focuses primarily on Alaska Native Corporation issues. And so this Unity Caucus kind of grew out of that, and it comprises of most of the recognized tribes, federally recognized tribes in the state. So the full working group met with a listening session, four listening session at the Tribal Unity Caucus. The working group was invited to the caucus by the Unity Group leadership, and so the working group members attended that annual meeting, which was a listening session for the VPSO working group. Finally, the week before session started, there was a public meeting in the Anchorage LIO of the working group to review the draft report. The commissioner and her staff were there, as well as many of the VPSO program personnel and leadership. Finally, just the week that of the beginning of session in 2019, the working group met in this room and adopted the report. separate.
Would it not have been January of 2020?
I think you're correct, Madam Chair, yes.
I'm sure I wasn't off a year.
I threw that in there on purpose just to see if y'all were paying attention. Thank you. You were paying attention. The co-chairs were also active, separate from the working group as a whole. The co-chairs met in Anchorage with AFN's CON committee, the Council for Advancement of Native Alaska Natives, with the AFN pre-planning committee meeting, which was where the working group got onto the agenda for AFN of that year. And if you remember, there was a panel presentation with the congressional delegation, I believe the attorney general, as well as our co-chairs were up on the panel on a presentation, a rural public safety presentation at AFN. So while the emergency declaration was originated by Attorney General Barr, the U.S. Department of Interior hosted some listening sessions in rural Alaska, and our co-chairs traveled to Nome for the Bureau of Interior for their listening session, along with the U.S. Attorney, I think, from Alaska was there at that listening session as well. And finally, the co-chairs, kind of the same week before the session started last year, they were invited by the leadership, not just the boots on the ground management of the VPSO organizations, but the leadership of all of the organizations met in Anchorage, and Senator Olson and Representative Kopp were at that meeting as well. So if you looked at the time frame, it was a pretty compressed time frame to really come up with ideas, and for the purposes of the bill, we don't really have to spend a lot of time on this slide, but the working group, and it's addressed in the report as well, came up with long-term recommendations and short-term recommendations. And I'll just say that there was a real sense of urgency to get a bill in the works and see if the working group could produce results right away. But they recognized that there were issues that were beyond what could be addressed in the short term. And you'll see them up here. These are right out of the report. I won't read them word for word, but kind of the one at the top, I think, really it really is kind of the primary one, which was nobody in the room and nobody at the Department of Public Safety really has ever done a true assessment of what public safety in rural Alaska to really adequately staff that would be. We have a sense, and we have a sense that it's more than what the state can afford, but there really has never been a deep look to say what really are the needs to provide an acceptable amount of services, and what are we doing right now. So that, and some of the other ones were just recognizing that we're not, with the Attorney General freeing up some money that came with that disaster declaration, there was the recognition that that was one-time funding, but it would be worth it to look long-term to see if there would be a way to secure recurring funding. And we mentioned Public Law 280 up there, and I know I said I wouldn't dwell too long on this one, but Public Law 280 is a state where where Congress gave six different states, concurrent misdemeanor criminal jurisdiction in Indian country. But when Congress did that, the Bureau of Indian Affairs historically in its budget never requests funding for public safety in those states. In other words, the tribes in those states get no public safety money from the Department of Interior. So it's essentially an unfunded mandate from the federal government. And Alaska is a PL 280 state. And it doesn't have to be that way to where it's an unfunded mandate. But it would kind of take a long-term look and a long-term effort to convince Congress and convince the Department of the Interior to start requesting an appropriation for PL 280 states for rural public safety. So that was kind of beyond what could happen in one interim and one session. So finally, a state version of the Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act, just looking at the success of the tribal health system. The tribal health system is a product of the of this law, and essentially the federal government contracts with tribes to deliver health care to tribal citizens. And as we found out this session, it's not only limited to tribal citizens, as vaccination for this building came from Search, which is a tribal health provider for the Southeast region. So could we find a way to design and redesign the delivery of public safety services in rural Alaska using that as a model? And then this is something that Senator Schauer has identified in the past, and these are all just kind of placeholders, which is really looking at the position of the VPSO and see if there are ways to create career ladders within that system. Right now, it's a singular position, level of position. So those are your long-term recommendations that are not in the bill, but part of the report. And this is our second to the last slide for this presentation. And these are just the 9 recommendations that came out of that are in the report and that are actually in the bill. So, and I'll advance to the next slide and then just keep this one up as I walk through the sectional analysis, just so you can have this up here for reference. But recommendation 1, this came from really the first meeting that the working group had with the commissioner. She identified straight away that, in her opinion, Department of Public Safety was just a granting agency, and they would manage the grants however the legislature defined the grant in statute. And she recommended that we look at the statute and consider updating it if we really wanted changes. And as the report points out, that was a very good recommendation, because the statute is pretty vague and doesn't really define a clear mission for the VPSO program, doesn't really give clear duties to the VPSO personnel. And if the program was languishing, the conclusion that's in the report that was adopted by the working group was that it really is up to the legislature to define the policy that is in place for the VPSO program and to give it a clear mission and a clear vision, and to perhaps update the duties that these people operate under. So that's really the primary recommendation that really is in the bill. Recommendations 2, 3, and 4 are all about financing and just not having such a tight control over the funding, but create more flflexibility. So the organizations that have more local control over the funds for the program, because VPSOs cover basically the entire state, and you aren't really, this is a recognition that you aren't going to have a one-size-fits-all for every region of the state where you find VPSO personnel, and recognizing that local people have a better idea of how to deliver services locally, perhaps, than a centralized power in an urban hub. So recommendations 3 and 4, 3 just recognizes that in the working group's opinion, there were kind of artificial lapses. The controls over the funding were so tight that there would be unspent money in the program at year end. And the VPSO coordinators and the programs all felt like those were artificial lapses, that they had needs, but they were just unable to work through the then bureaucracy to get funding approved. And there are examples of that in the report, if you care to look there. But things like ATV vehicles would be approved for acquisition, but 3 or 4 years later, tires for those ATVs, funding for those would be denied. We had in the Chugachmet region, the road villages on the road system, requests for fuel for the VPSO approved vehicles, you know, basically Ford SUVs. They'd be approved for half a tank of gas, so you couldn't get to a village and return. So those types of decisions about funding were really causing the lapses in funding when there really was need. So recommendation 4 was fund unfunded mandates, and we can show that. I can get into that when we walk through the bill. 5, Yeah, full indirect costs. There is an artificial cap right now on the organization's indirect costs. Recommendation 6 was to recognize kind of a conflict between the troopers and the VPSO program. The recommendation was to move the grant management to the Department of Commerce to just help alleviate this kind of conflict. But recommendation 7 was to keep the operational advisory training and experience oversight of the Department of Public Safety over the VPSO personnel. In other words, don't change the relationship between public safety and the VPSO program, just where the funding originates from. Finally, really this is really the final one, which is because changes to the program had historically happened unilaterally with no notice to the organizations, the recommendation was to have a negotiated rulemaking process so that if there are going to be changes proposed by public safety, that they would ideally work in partnership with the organizations that were delivering this service rather than doing it unilaterally without consulting or having any advice as to how those changes might affect the delivery of public safety in rural Alaska. And recommendation 9 was just a very practical recommendation, which is to take the existing regulations that the Department of Public Safety has for the VPSO program and put them into statute. The idea being the working group didn't want to completely upend this program and give the feeling to the VPSO organizations that the rug had been pulled out from underneath them and that we were in a lot of uncertainty was being introduced, but rather to codify in statute kind of the regular inner workings of the program as the good things that were occurring, so that we wouldn't hit them with a whole bunch of change and give them some change shock. So I'll just stop there, Madam Chair, just for the that's kind of covers the report, and see if there are questions.
And I just want members to know also who we have online. We've got a good lineup of some bright people that are available, as well as lifelines for Senator Olson and Mr. Truitt. We have Lieutenant Eric Olson with Alaska Public Safety, State Troopers. We have Elizabeth Denisky, Administrative Service Director with Public Safety. Catherine Monfredo with the Director of Statewide Services Public Safety. Robert Pearson, Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Leonard Wallner, Chiacmute. How do you say that?
Chiacmute.
And Sandra Moeller, Director, Division of Community and Regional Affairs. So quite a lineup there, and I'm happy to repeat those names if you can't quite remember to whom you might want to direct your questions. So are there questions for Senator Olson or Mr. Truitt from members? Okay, do you want to kind of walk us through the bill itself then?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Ken Truitt, staff for Senator Olson. And real quick, and I'll slip back to the prior slide as I walk through the sectional, but this really just shows you the operational provisions. There's only one statute for the VPSO program, and it's here. And this is in abbreviated form, but it's really the operational provisions from this statute. And as you can see, it's really just three sentences. And this is pretty much, I think, the problem that the working group identified, is this kind of vagueness has led to competing ideas about what the program should be. Competing ideas by the communities where the VPSO officers find themselves in, different expectations from the Department of Public Safety. And so hopefully what we have with this bill is to add some clarity and some, like I said, some vision and some really clear direction as to what the program should be. But as you look at this, there's really not much here other than that you have a program in the Department of Public Safety with funds, and that the commissioner can adopt regulations related to that. So if we I'll head down to the sectional now, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Section 1 relates to criminal history background checks, and it proposes to amend Alaska Statute 1262-400. Historically, the criminal background checks had been done by the Department of Public Safety, and it was unilaterally decided by the department that they would stop doing that, and that would be the responsible of the VPSO grantee organizations themselves. And so this was one of those unfunded mandates that Recommendation 4 kind of relates to, and also the kind of a unilateral decision that was just kind of caught the VPSO programs by surprise. And so it's just saying that this is an Alaska public safety, a state of Alaska public safety function that's being performed by the VPSO organizations and personnel, and that the background checks for that will be provided by the Department of Public Safety. Section 2, related to that, proposes to amend Alaska Statute 1865-080, one of the department's enabling statutes. The amendment requires that the department secure the background checks for the VPSO personnel. So Sections 1 and 2 work together for that purpose. Section 3, this is a proposed change to the existing VPSO statute, the single VPSO statute, Alaska Statute 1865-670, and this is a proposed repeal and readopt. I will say that a lot of what is in the existing statute is still in this statute, but this just proposes to add a lot more. Some of what is in here is from the existing Department of Public Safety regulations for the program, and I'll identify those as I go through. Subsection A has been rewritten to split the grant management function off to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. This is related to recommendation number 6. Subsection B is mostly similar to the current statute, subsection B, but it's been updated to include a reference to the Commissioner of Commerce. Subsection C is new, and it's the statutory codification of current department regulation 13 AAC 96020, with changes that reflect that Commerce will be performing the financial management for the grants. Subsection D is new and is a codification of a public safety regulation, and I'll skip the citation, Madam Chair, just for the interest of speed, with changes that reflect that Commerce will be performing the financial management of the grants. So another feature that's very specific is one particular organization wanted to pay its VPSO officer a bonus, a year-end bonus, but that was forbidden because it was against the grant agreement. The grant agreement is specific that VPSO personnel can only be paid for from VPSO grant funds. So this proposes to change that to give programs a little bit more flexibility, that if they would like to augment the salary of their VPSO officers with other funds from the grantee organization, that they have the flexibility to do that. Subsection E is new, and it's a partial statutory codification of a current public safety regulation, specifically 040A2. And this is sets the overall policy that there'll be one VPSO assigned per village, but it allows, the statute is different than the regulation in that it allows the grantee to request additional VPSO personnel per village. So it proposes to give the organizations flexibility. Subsection F is new and allows for roving VPSO personnel so they can itinerate between villages. At the time of the report and the drafting of the statute last year, it was the practice of the department to deny this practice or the ability of organizations to move their VPSO personnel based on public safety needs in the region. The statute would provide the VPSO grantees the flexibility to manage that as the public safety needs in their region arise. Subsection G is new and is a partial statutory codification of DPS regulation 040, specifically sub Section B changes to reflect that Commerce will be forming financial management. And it has the record-keeping requirements that are currently in the public safety regulations. Subsection H contains a new regulation adopting authority for the public safety commissioner so that they will use their regulation adopting authority with the consultation requirements that are in a later subsection of the bill. Subsection I is a partial implementation of the recommendations about the full indirect rate. This proposes a statewide average cap of 35%. So if your indirect is below 35%, you will be fully funded on your indirect rate. If it's above that, you'll be compensated up to 35%. So subsection J and K are pretty much the same, and this is the negotiated rulemaking. One subsection is for Commerce, one subsection is for the Department of Public Safety. So that's the repeal and the readopt of the existing statute. I'll pause there before I go on to the other new statutes. The other new statutes are primarily codifications of current Department of Public Safety regulations, but I'll take a pause there, Madam Chair.
Anyone have any questions for Mr. Jewett so far, or anyone online related to what he's gone over? Seeing none, you can plow forward. Senator Wilson, I'm sorry.
Yeah, my question's more for, I think, recommendation 3 in terms of restoring funding to the FY18 levels and sort of the lapse in funds. I mean, there were pretty significant lapse in funds for multiple years within that. I mean, would it be first more prudent to say to allow more flexibility to see what happens currently without raising those rates to the FY18 funds before we decide to restore those funds to that level?
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Senator Wilson, I think that's an excellent question. And, you know, I think the best answer I can give you to that is that really is an appropriation. Recommendation number 3 is really an appropriation question. And what's in the bill is really policy. I think you raise a really good point. If we free up kind of the tight hand, if you will, that was on the funding, will the programs use the entire appropriation that they have and then to take it year by year? I think that's certainly a prudent approach, especially from a Senate Finance Committee member. Sir, yeah.
And if I could follow up, I guess the question would be, and I have not looked at that, but I believe your office is the subcommittee chair of this department. So is recommendation 3 in the subcommittee recommendation so far that would be going to finance?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, as you know, as chairing subcommittees, you get the governor's budget request and you start your subcommittee actions based on the governor's request. The governor's budget bill request does not include FY18 levels, to my knowledge. We're still working on the subcommittee at the subcommittee level.
Madam Chair, if I could, we have not closed out the public Senator Wilson. This is Senator Wilson. We have not closed out the public safety, and so we are still looking at the possibility of bringing that and submitting that as the final budget that goes over to the House and goes on from there.
All right. Thank you.
And I admit I think I have a few cobwebs in my brain about this, and I may be thinking of something else. But wasn't it such that this program, the need was great as far as recruiting people and filling spots, but we had difficulty, so the funds weren't all expended? Was that happening a couple of years in a row with this program, or am I confused with something else?
You're, Madam Chair, you are correct. This is Senator Olson again. You are correct. There were times where the funding that we had given from the Finance Committee to the Department of Public Safety were not fully implemented. The restrictions that were there were significant enough that the various nonprofits that were out there that were the contract coordinators were having very difficulty trying to free up those funds to go ahead and recruit people. And so because of that, we had a number of recruits that actually withered on the vine and couldn't wait for the promised funding that was there to go ahead and continue on with their recruitment and put them on before they went off to the, for example, the academy.
Okay, and can you remind us what that FY18 level was, just since that's a recommendation? I know we're not the finance committee, but the fact that I remembered what I did, I certainly don't remember the amount. Yeah. Can you tell us the amount?
Senator, Madam Chair, I don't have the amount off the top of my head. What I do recall was that the budget request that this was in response to was proposed around a $700,000 decrement to the VPSO grant, the overall statewide grant, and this was specifically the justification for that was that there were these lapsed funds, so the program surely doesn't need this money. And I think, to the administration's credit, overall looking for ways to apply downward pressure, I think from a very high level that was probably where that, I mean, I can't speak to motives, but we're all looking for downward pressure on the budgets. And if you have a program that's lapsing, that's certainly ripe for a decrement. But what we found from the coordinators was that perhaps was an artificial lapse of funds because they just were unable to expend and get approval authorization for their funds.
Okay, great. Thank you. If I don't see any other questions, and if you want to continue with the sectional, please, Mr. Truitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And our hope was to get through the sectional and provide you with invited testimony at the next bill hearing. And there are folks online who will have the absolute specific experiences with the VPSO program. Folks, specifically Mr. Wallner is online on behalf of all the VPSO programs, and he will be invited testimony at the next hearing and can answer very specific program questions for you. It's not our intent to not answer those questions at all, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Continuing with the sectional, Section 4, this is proposes several new statutes, proposed new statute in the public safety chapter, section 672. It's a codification of a current public safety regulation dealing with VPSO qualification requirements. So this just puts into statute what it requires to become a VPSO. Proposed section 674 is a codification of current public safety regulation dealing with background checks, as we mentioned in the discussion of the VPSO working group in the report. Proposed new section 676 is again a codification of a current regulation dealing with training requirements, and this is something that your department personnel and your VPSO personnel can speak to, but what's in the statute reflects a full Public Safety Academy curriculum. So this would equate similar or the same training that any police officer would go through if they go through the training academy in Sitka. And that's a little bit different. And this is one that's a little bit of a change. And it's one of those areas where the training requirements had been changed unilaterally two or three times over the last decade. And so this was the desire of the working group of the VPSO court. This was the working group heard the desire from the coordinators that they prefer the full police academy training. So these people would be qualified at the end of their VPSO training to transfer laterally to other police forces in the state, I believe, but they can tell you that whether I'm correct on that or not. But that is something that's new, and it's a change for the program. or at least that they've had full academies in the past, and then they went to half of the academy. It's one of those things that has kind of whipsawed, and I think would contribute to the difficulty in retaining people in the VPSO program. Proposed new statute 678 is the codification of a DPS two different DPS regulations dealing with firearms training. Proposed section 682 is again the codification of a Department of Public Safety regulation, again dealing with VPSO certification. Most police officers are certified by the Police Standards Council. The VPSO program, VPSO personnel historically have been certified by the Commissioner of Public Safety. This doesn't propose to change that. So this is still certification by the department of the VPSO personnel. And that is something that makes these personnel a little bit different than other law enforcement. I think long-term, looking to see whether VPSO officers should be certified by the Police Standards Council is something that didn't make it into our long-term recommendations, but it was something that was discussed. But this particular bill doesn't propose to change that. It proposes to remain the same. Proposed new section 684, again, is codification of the public safety regulation dealing with the denial, revocation, and lapse of a VPSO certificate. Proposed new section 686. This is new. This is the beefed up, more fleshed out duties and functions of a VPSO personnel. And when we worked with the VPSO coordinators and the programs, what is in proposed section 686 are all of the functions that they're currently performing, but prior to now haven't been codified either in regulation or in statute. Finally, new section 688 is a proposed new section, which just has definitions, and some of them would be new. And the rest of the changes in the bill, Madam Chair, members of the committee, are technical changes or conforming changes. I'll go through them very quickly. Section 5 contemplates that Commerce will need enabling language to manage the grant management of the VPSO program, and that's what Section 5 does. It adds to the Department of Commerce's enabling statute to add the VPSO program. Section 6 creates a grandfather provision. Since this bill proposes to change the training requirements for VPSO personnel, this is a pretty standard grandfather provision that would grandfather in existing VPSO that may not meet the training requirements that are in the bill. Section 7 is uncodified language that is just an instruction to the Department of Public Safety to keep the current level of interaction between the Department of Public Safety and the VPSO program intact. And Section 8 is just a timing statute in terms of when the grant applications are due at Commerce to year 2021. Section 9 is the last section of the bill, and its effective date has an immediate effective date. And I'll pause right here, Madam Chair, and give kind of a big caveat to everything that I just said about the Department of Commerce. One of the reasons why it's day 92 of the session and we're having our initial rollout of this is we've been talking with the different VPSO program personnel and programs. And one of the things that changed after the introduction of this bill and during the interim is that the commissioner moved the grant management out of the Division of Alaska State Troopers, where it historically has always been managed, into the commissioner's office. And the programs report that has been wildly successful. And the uncertainty of moving, again, the grant management to a completely different department is really making the programs themselves, and invited testimony, I fully expect, can speak to this. But one of the other things that we have heard from the VPSO programs is by potentially moving the grant management to a different department, we as a state would be doubling the bureaucracy that they have to interact with in delivering the program, and that added level of bureaucratic interchange they worry could lead to some unintended consequences. You're essentially doubling the number of bureaucrats that you can get crosswise with, and they feel very comfortable with how the department is currently managing the program, and they're doing, as they described to our office, they're doing some pretty good things specifically with the funding so that they can utilize the full appropriation. So we are at the, Madam Chair, at your at your permission, we do have a blank CS prepared for you to consider that would take everything to do with the Department of Commerce out of this bill, which would significantly simplify, make it a shorter bill for sure, and wouldn't involve an entirely new department.
Thank you for that, Mr. Truitt, because I actually was just, before you said you had the CS, I was going to ask if the sponsor was open to making that change. And before I go to Senator Myers, I can tell he has a question. And is the DBS commissioner open to continuing that in the commissioner's office from your understanding?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is Senator Olson. The new commissioner appointee, the nominee that's up for confirmation, is very much in favor of the VPSO program and is willing to go ahead and continue on with it in his office.
Okay, thank you. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got two questions. So first, regarding Section 6 and the grandfathering clause, I believe it's a good idea. My question is, do you believe that we should put a time limit on it to give people a chance to become certified under the new requirements? So, for example, just off the top of my head, I would say you can stay certified under the old rules, but you would have to be certified under the new rules in, say, 2 years.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Myers, through the chair. You know, the working group worked with both the department and the current VPSO grantees in arriving at the bill that you see in front of you, and I think we would defer to the VPSO grantees as to what the effect of that would be. I don't know what the effect of that would be, and they could tell us, and and I'm sure they could speak to that when they're here for invited testimony, and Mr. Wallner is also online, and he could potentially speak to that as well.
I could ask Mr. Wallner, Leonard Wallner, did you hear Senator Myers' question? If not, he can repeat it.
I believe I have the question. I understand the question through the chair, Senator Meyer. My name is Leonard Wallner. I am the VPSO program manager, regional coordinator for Chugachmeet. And to answer your question, that certainly is doable to put a date for all VPSOs to come into compliance. There, what would happen, you need to bear in mind that with the Alaska Law Enforcement Training Academy, over time, the number of instructional hours have changed and course curriculum has changed. So that would be that the deal with that would be that between the grantees, Department of Public Safety, and the Academy commander, we would have to identify what changes have occurred in training between when the VPSO in question went through the training and what the updates are now. The classic example would be the VPSO that was mentioned, Senator Olson mentioned in White Mountain, who has been a VPSO for 30 years. When he went through the training, I can guarantee you the number of hours in his academy has changed significantly from what it is now, what it was then to now. Certainly, you know, there have been in the past, we have had regional training, but with the funding, annual regional training, but with funding cuts, that's been a casualty, too, with regard to regular updated annual training. So it'd be a work in progress, but it could be done.
Thank you. Senator Wilson.
Yes, I did. Thank you. So my second question is a little broader. Looking at this bill, I see a lot of good ideas. I like a lot of what's in this bill. My question is how it relates to the initial problem that was talked about with the VPSO working group, which is dealing with recruitment and retention. And so far, the only thing that I see that directly affects that is allowing the grantees to pay bonuses. I can definitely see how that would help with recruitment and retention, but I'm just not sure how the rest of the rest of the bill affects that particular issue.
Mr. Truitt?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Myers. Two ways I can answer this. The first one is to say I think Mr. Wallner can also speak to that. But I think from a broader perspective, the commissioner's encouragement to the working group to look at the statute first, that was the commissioner's. Mm-hmm. That was her recommendation. And the statute is printed out fully in the report. I think the lack of a clear vision, mission, and specified duties has led to a lot of differing interpretations of what the program should be. And that that's a very nice way of saying that there's a lot of conflict. It may not be spoken of loudly, but there's a lot of friction between what is being delivered and what is needed. And at the heart of that is the lack of any kind of specificity or clear vision. There's just a real lack of vision in the statute for what this program, what rural public safety needs today versus what it was and what the needs were when it was adopted in the early 70s.
Might I say, add to that, that, you know, this is just my gut, but structure provides certainty, and that provides a new level of respect also for the profession. Is kind of where I see it. Do you have another follow-up, or you?
If I could just comment on that, Mr. Truitt, thank you for those comments. I think I see a little bit more of the vision here of where you're going with the bill with those comments. I would tend to agree a little bit with what Senator Hughes said there as far as structure goes. But I think if I'm understanding you correctly, you're basically saying that we will be better able to attract people to the job when we are more clear at the beginning with what is with what the job entails. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely agree with that.
All right. And Senator Wilson, did you have a question?
I do, Madam Chair. My question is similar to Senator Myers' question, and I think it's Section 4 of this bill, those new sections in conflict to the grandfathering clause. As Section 4 would and sort of increase the qualifications going forth to become a public village safety officer. And sort of if Section 4 was applied today, currently, how many VPSOs would no longer qualify to be even allowed to be entered into the program just because of the qualifications and standards have changed in terms of the applicants going forth?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I think Mr. Wallner is probably the best person to answer that question specifically. However, these qualification requirements were proposed closely along with Mr. Wallner and his peers who managed the program. So the answer might surprise you. It might surprise me, but I think he's in the best position to address that question.
Mr. Wallner, did you hear Senator Wilson's question? Would you like it repeated?
Yes, I did. Yes,
okay,
ma'am. Leonard Wallner again, Chugach Mute, VPSO program manager. bear in mind as you look through the qualifications, the minimum qualifications for a village public safety officer, the vast majority of the qualifications do not change. The one change that jumps out at me is that with regard to, let me see, which one was it? I'm just looking for the specific number. It was with regard to offenses for DUI, driving under the influence. It was EI, misdemeanor operating. Okay, and but that changed to where it used to be that I believe it was just one. No, you were allowed one conviction for DUI. If you had two or more, then that eliminated you it eliminated you as a prospect to become a VPSO. And so with the new regulation here, it took that particular requirement and now made it that you could have, that the applicant can have up to, two or less, okay? So it bumped it up by one, and because we did have applicants in our pool, believe it or not, that, you know, some of them in their younger, wilder days, you know, had more than one DUI. So, but otherwise, looking at the rest of it, I believe it's status quo. It's with nothing's jumping out at me, at least not offhand, that that has changed. That is the one significant change to the requirements.
Senator Wilson, follow up.
Yeah, I just some of these sections are new sections that weren't qualifications for VPSO in current statute, and so just wondering if. You know, for 18.65.62 under the qualifications, some of those items like conviction of a felony or some of the other misdemeanors and some of the other qualifications in here, those aren't current qualifications now in statute. And just wondering if that, and then the sort of the reciprocity functions also in Section 4 of being able to use your current VPO status to then do a lateral transfer to another law enforcement agency where the previous folks may not have, the same level of training that would be a qualifier under a grandfather clause. I'm just a little concerned about that piece.
Mr. Molnar, do you want to respond to that?
I can address that as well, Madam Chair, if you.
Mr. Molnar, did you have a response? And then we'll go to Mr. Truitt.
I guess I don't completely understand. You know, one of the things I'm thinking here is I look at this is that I question whether or not maybe because I don't see a lot of changes here, but we could be, what I'm talking about, it could be is that we have what is now being codified versus what was in regulation. That I'm not sure, because, like here, having not previously been convicted of felony, that's been there, that's been applied, we've used that. The same thing with the other offenses, the misdemeanor offenses, misdemeanor less than 5 years. That's all been in place. So it could be a matter of making this codified.
So in other words, some of those things may have been a regulation. I'm looking at our time and I've got several questions. We have another bill we want to bring up. I want to make sure that we have the opportunity, I'm happy to see this. It's a pretty substantive bill, and we appreciate it. We know a lot of work went into it. So at this point in time, I want to thank the sponsor and his staff, and for all those who've been patiently online available to answer questions. We'll probably need you at another point when we bring this bill back up. So thank you very much. And at this time, we're going to set aside SB 81. And we'll take a brief at ease while we transition to SB 46, Law Enforcement Registry Use of Force by Senator Gray Jackson. Senator Jackson, welcome to Senator Community Regional Affairs. If you'd introduce yourself and your staff, put us on the record and tell us about SB 36.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. I'm so honored that you're here on my bill today. And I want to introduce my FI fellow, Delaney Thiel, and I'm just really happy that you were able to get to it today because her contract ended yesterday and she came back without getting paid just so she can follow the bill because she carried it. So I'm really appreciative of that, Delaney. First, I want to thank the hardworking men and women peace officers and office staff who provide the services that protect the lives and welfare of the people in Alaska's communities. I want to thank them all for their service. The recent casualties surrounding civilians has drawn even greater attention to issues around policing and police to community relationships. This moment seems to have created real momentum to address one of the longest standing injustices in society. During last summer and into the fall, my office, along with Senator Begich's office, worked together to develop a series of bills. These bills were drafted by Legislative Legal as a bill packet that our offices referred to as TPIP, Turning Pain into Progress. TPIP was crafted after the National Eight Can't Wait campaign, which is eight specific policies that have been proven with data to reduce police violence by as much as 72% when implemented. I recognize that the national campaign can't and shouldn't be applied to a place as unique as Alaska. Therefore, I spent a great deal of time talking to stakeholders and gaining input throughout the process of drafting these bills to ensure that the proposal would be fitting for Alaska. I'm pleased to say that I've engaged public safety agencies to include the Anchorage Police Department, Anchorage Police Employees Association, Public Safety Employees Association, and the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives during the process. Because of my proactive approach, I am confident in moving forward with the implementation of public safety policy changes that will benefit both the citizens of Alaska and our law enforcement officers. At this time, Madam Chair and the committee, I'd like to ask Delaney Thiel to read the sponsor statement and also go over the sectional analysis. Thank you, Delaney.
Welcome, Delaney. Place yourself on the record and begin.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson and Chair Hughes. For the record, this is Delaney Thiel, staff to Senator Gray Jackson. Senate Bill 46 establishes a use of force database under AS 4441055 that will be overseen by the Department of Public Safety, which will collect reports of use of force by a municipal police officer, municipal correctional facility employee, a probation officer, parole officer, correctional officer, state trooper, village public safety officer, or regional officer. This report will be submitted by the Department of Public Safety under AS 4441020H. The Alaska Police Standards Council shall maintain a central registry with information that the council obtains from the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Corrections, or a municipality. This bill also requires the Alaska Police Standards Council to adopt regulations that require a police officer, probation officer, parole officer, municipal officer, or correctional officer to report to a supervisor when an incident of force or deadly force occurred or in a situation in which an officer was prepared to use deadly force. This report will also include demographic information, such as the person whom the force was used, age, gender identity, and sexual orientation, if freely given by the individual. Additionally, the officer who used the force in the borough or census area in which the force occurred. Currently, there is no database that tracks instances of use of force within the state of Alaska. While this database will not be open to the public, it will be shared for employment purposes amongst departments and agencies who may be hiring an officer or employee, as well as the Alaska State Legislature. This will allow for transparency among agencies and will close loopholes that allow officers to be hired on to another agency after being fired for use of force incidents or certificate denial or revocation. At this time, Madam Chair, I'd like to move on and read the sectional analysis, if I may.
Continue.
Thank you. Section 1, AS 1865-220, is amended by adding a new subsection B, which will require a police officer, probation officer, parole officer, municipal correctional officer, or correctional officer to report to a supervisor when another officer used or prepared to use deadly force against a person. C, requires that the council shall maintain a central registry of denied or revoked officer certificates. D, requires that the council shall adopt and prepare a report detailing the registry information to the chief clerk of the House of Representatives and the Senate secretary no later than December 1st of each year. E states that upon request, the council shall assist a department, an agency, or municipality in developing rules that comply with regulations adopted under B of this section. Section 2, AS 1865-285, is amended to replace the word may with shall. Section 3, AS 1865-290B, is amended to define municipal correctional officer. Section 4, AS 1865-290, is amended to add deadly force, as given the meaning given in AS 1181-900B. Section 5, 1865-670C, is amended to provide training in the subject set out in 1865-220A3. Amends 2971 by adding a new section, 2971-070, Use of Force Reporting Requirement. Amends AS 4428028 by adding a new subsection D that requires the Department of Public Safety to submit a report on each incident in which the probation officer, parole officer, or correctional officer uses force against a person. This report must include information under 4441055B. Amends 4441020 by adding a new subsection to read, the Department of Public Safety shall submit to the statewide use of force database each time a state trooper, VPSO, or regional public safety officer uses force against a person. Section 9, 4441055 is amended to add a new subsection to establish a statewide use of force database and its requirements. Section 10, 1865-280B is repealed. Section 11, the uncodified law of the state of Alaska is amended by adding a new section that applies to employment contracts entered on or after the effective date of Section 2 of this act. Section 12, amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska by adding a new section pertaining to transition. Employment, peace officers, giving them an effective date of Section 10 of this act to comply with 1865-240 requirements. Section 3, amended by adding a new section regarding regulations of the Department of Corrections, the Department of Public Safety, and municipalities that employ a person as a police officer or in a municipality correctional facility to adopt in public regulations. Section 14, Section 13 provides for an effective date under 01-10-070C. Section 15 provides for an effective date of this act. Thank you, Madam Chair.
the sponsor have any other remarks before I go to questions or comments from members?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the first thing that I find right off the bat is in the bill we talk about force and deadly force, and we've got a definition for deadly force, but I don't see a definition of force.
Use of force?
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me, through the chair, Senator Myers, use of force is what you're referring to, right?
Not only use of force, but also force in general.
Okay. In state statutes, there's already a definition for force, and I've had lots of conversations with, lots of conversations, but a few conversations with different folks in terms of coming up with a better definition for use of force, and we're still working on that. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'll just, if I can follow up, because we have Lieutenant Eric Olson online from Department of Public Safety. He might be able to tell us what that definition of force, if you'd like, Senator Myers. Lieutenant Olson, can you tell us what the current definition of force would be, is, in statute?
Yes, Lieutenant Olson, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gray Jackson. I believe it's ASL 1181-900. I don't have it specifically memorized, but that's something I can look up for this group and respond back here in a few minutes. I just need some time to look it up.
Okay. Well, we thank you. If you could do that, we'll bring you back on. Did you have any follow-up
No.
Okay. Senator Wilson?
Yes, I had a similar question to Senator Myers, so thank you, Senator Myers, for sharing that thought with me. But I do have a question in terms of accessibility to the data. I'm assuming this data would just be made public and that people could do a FOIA request for it, and I'm just a little concerned upon sort of that privacy concern of sort of public campaigns going after somebody that had a use of force for a serious situation or an area of law enforcement that may have to use of force a little bit more regularly just because of the nature of their the folks that may work in a more sort of more at risk, I don't want to say someone that may work in narcotics may use that more, or someone that has a beat that has more call outs may have to use of force more in terms of if they have just in general statistics of where crimes or areas that may be higher density of those call-outs. And so if you have a law enforcement officer that may work in those areas, I'm just concerned that they may have a higher, you know, an outlier maybe. And I understand the intent of this. I just am concerned upon the public access to this information.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Wilson. I think I understand your question, and I believe your question is basically, is a person's name, address going to be public? Absolutely not. This bill provides that information is not going to be public information at all. Only statistics will be public. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Wilson.
A follow-up, Senator Wilson. So the database with the names and information of officers would not be available to the public, but it would be shared among agencies and police departments looking to hire someone. I believe I recall something in your statements. It would be a way for people to look prior to hiring something. But isn't it pretty standard when someone is hired that they would do that kind of research? And I was actually speaking with someone with DPS recently, and I think within some of these agencies, they're already tracking that. So there may not be a connected database statewide, but I think that, you know, troopers keep it, and I'm guessing APD keeps it. Are you familiar whether these different individual entities, law enforcement entities, are keeping their own, and whether when they're hiring somebody, they are checking with the past law enforcement entity on the officer's record in this regard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that some of these agencies are doing that. At least I hope they are. But the key word here is what you said, some of the agencies. This statute would provide that all of the agencies have to do that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. I just want to members to note we have a list here, too, in case it triggers a question. You just heard from Lieutenant Eric Olson with Alaska Public Safety State Troopers. We have Peter, I'm not sure I pronounce it, Malanarik with the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. We have Robert Griffiths with Executive Director of Police Standards Council. And we have Catherine Monfreda, again, with Director of Statewide Services Public Safety. So those folks are online. Does Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had another question for the sponsor. So the bill, as of right now, it's suggesting that we track whether or not somebody has their certificate to be a police officer revoked, so that other departments can keep up with who has had their certificates revoked, which makes sense. The one thing that I'm concerned about is that the ways that somebody can lose that certification there's a lot of ways that somebody can lose that certification. And so we definitely want to be tracking whether or not somebody has lost their certification due to improper use of force. But do we also want to be tracking whether or not somebody lost their certification because, for example, they gained too much weight and can't pass the physical anymore?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Myers. I appreciate your question, but I can't answer it. So maybe somebody online will be able to assist me. Thank you.
And who might so as far as getting certificated, would that be Catherine Manfredo, Director of Statewide Services? Is that you? Or would that be Robert Griffiths, Police Standards Council? Catherine, would it be you?
Through the chair, this is Catherine Manfredo. No, I think the Executive Director Griffiths would know the answer to that question.
Okay, Robert Griffiths, you're up. Please state your name for the record, and if you didn't hear the question, we can repeat it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Robert Griffiths, or Bob Griffiths, Executive Director of Alaska Police Standards Council. If you could repeat the question, I think I would appreciate it.
Senator Meyer?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Griffiths, the question is effectively, as the bill is currently written, if we're maintaining a database of officers who have had their certifications revoked, would we be lumping people together who have had it revoked for multiple or for different types of reasons? So, for example, one person could have their certificate revoked because of an improper use of force, while another person could have their certificate revoked because they didn't pass the physical. And I'm concerned if that is the case, then we're improperly lumping people together that have lost it for different reasons. As the bill is currently written, is that the case?
Senator, through the chair, the council only revokes certification based on violation or lack of compliance with current regulations. Excuse me. For example, you used couldn't pass the physical. That's not a standard that the council looks to revoke somebody permanently, revoke their certification permanently. It would have to be a misconduct, a abuse of authority, a unlawful use of force, lack of respect for the rights of others. Those sorts of violations would result in them being in the database, which we currently have.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And we are coming up on time, but because we have the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police here, Peter Malarnarik, and I know I'm messing up your last name, but I was just wondering my question as far as do the various law enforcement entities around the state, whether it's local police departments, whether it's actually those that are employing village police safety officers that we heard about earlier, the troopers, are they all keeping, do they have reporting requirements? Are they keeping records on this as agencies? And then do they share that when somebody might be looking at hiring somebody from another state law enforcement entity?
Yeah, this is Peter Monarch with the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. Yeah, many agencies have keep track of use of force. We do here at Soldotna PD, As far as whether they share that, it depends on what releases the applicant makes when they're applying for a police officer. Everybody undergoes a background check, and those kind of things are usually gone over in the background check.
So you said many do, so does that lead me to conclude that some may not, or you're just not sure?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I know that there's that the people do, like we do, state troopers do, but otherwise it's not it's not something that all agencies shared or required to say, yeah, we keep use of force reports.
Okay, and then you mentioned that before hiring there's a background check, but would that a use of force that occurred while someone was on duty for a law enforcement entity, would that necessarily show up in a background? I'm going to say inappropriate use of force, not use of force. Use of force does occur. Would that show up in a background check?
If it was within the departmental records and the person signed a release for that, that would be something that would be disclosed.
Okay. All right. Well, this is community regional affairs. We're not state affairs. We don't really always deal with these kind of matters. So it's kind of like opening up a whole new world to us on this particular committee. And we could spend a lot of time, but we are actually a couple minutes over time. So I want to thank the sponsor and thank you for giving an extra day of your own time to come back in, Delaney. We appreciate that. And we're going to set this bill aside at this time. And thank you very much for joining us today. We're going to hold the next Community Regional Affairs Committee meeting this Thursday, April 22nd, when we will hear Senate Joint Resolution 13 regarding broadband. And a reminder that amendments for this resolution are due to our office by tomorrow at 3 p.m. And that's pretty important because typically we have more than one hearing on a piece of legislation. We are fast-tracking this. We are hoping to get it over to the other body. This is a pressing issue. There is a lot at play right now regarding broadband, so we want to get this moved quickly. So if you do want to look over that, and if you have any suggestions or amendments, please get them to our office by 3 p.m. tomorrow. Are there any final comments from members? Seeing none, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 5:05 p.m.